Okay, and now for something completely different. Up next is Ultra Petroleum, which recently reorganized. Ultra's core asset is the Pinedale Field in the Green River Basin, a low-cost, predictable natural gas asset with substantial running room. In a reversal of fortune for those that have followed the company for some time, Pinedale is now well-positioned geographically from a basis perspective. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Watford, Chairman, President, and CEO.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. This is welcome. Thanks for attending Ultra's first post-restructuring large investor presentation. So you guys are making history, whether you want to or not. Forward-looking statements, if you want to read those from all of us. Ultra Petroleum, as previously stated, a Western Basin-focused natural gas company. High margins, low costs. Decades of inventory, a lot of running room, again, with a focus on Western Basin natural gas. We recently emerged from an in-court restructuring, couldn't get done what we needed to get done out of court, did it in court. Very unique result because we were a solvent bankrupt company, which means that we had a lot of equity value at the end of the day, so that we paid everyone off what they were owed. Principal, interest, vendors, everyone. We didn't haircut anyone at all. And as a result of that, our old shareholders own slightly less than 50% of the company on a go-forward basis. The old five members of the board continued with two additions, and management continued. So a very unique situation where through reorganization we fixed some things we had to fix. But solvency, a lot of equity value retained. But there are some clear benefits from the reorganization we're going to talk about in just a minute. We're going to mention our company highlights, asset review, which is really Pinedale, our guidance for 2017, and a wrap-up summary. Benefits from the ugly time spent in in-court restructuring, as we like to call it. We materially improved our already low-cost structure by eliminating legacy transportation costs and reducing gathering processing fees and interest costs. And the cost savings contribute to an improvement in our margins of 55 cents per MCFE or unit of production, or a 36% improvement from fourth quarter 15. Let's just walk through the items. Our transportation costs prior to the reorganization effort were $84 million a year, which on a per unit basis for fourth quarter of 2015 were 29 cents in MCFE. For fourth quarter of 17, there'll be zero. So a benefit of 29 cents in MCFE. Processing fees, gathering processing fees, we have an annual savings of $12 million. And this had to do with a renegotiation of the processing fees, more so than gathering. But fourth quarter 15 unit costs have been 31 cents per MCFE. Fourth quarter 17, 28 cents, or a 3 cent benefit. And interest costs, $60 million of interest costs in 2015. On a per unit basis, 59 cents an M. Now, fourth quarter 17 with less overall debt. Interest costs about the same coupon rate, but 36 cents an MCFE for a benefit of 23 cents. So a total savings of $156 million, or 55 cents for MCFE. So we already had a reputation as a low-cost producer, and our costs just got lower. Quick summary of highlights. High quality and deep asset base with attractive returns. Low risk, repeatable. We have 2,600 locations drilled in Pinedale and Jonah Field. Predictable development. Attractive realized prices. Low-cost operator. Probably almost the lowest, if not the lowest, cash cost. Uinta and Marcellus provide additional upside, and we have a very strong balance sheet now and cash flow profile, and we have a reasonable management team. I'll make that kind joke. A quick map showing where our assets are. Prime asset, southwestern Wyoming, the Pinedale and Jonah Field. It's a Lance and Mesa Verde production. It's in the Green River Basin, 69,000 acres. 96% gas, 90% operated, first quarter, 17 production, 659 million cubic feet a day. We have a small oil field in Utah, 8,000 acres, 83% oil, 100% operated, 2,800 barrels a day of production. And we have a smallish non-operated position, Marcellus, 72,000 net acres, all gas, non-op, 34 million a day of production. Let's talk about costs, because that's where we like to strive to improve constantly, because we believe that with a low-cost company, we can make money throughout the commodity cycles, commodity price cycles. So this is a slide that shows our cash costs, cash operating costs, from the first quarter of 14 through the first quarter of 17. It shows a pretty consistent ability to reduce cash costs with a recent time sustainable cost structure, about a dollar per MCFE. As we talked about earlier in the benefits from the reorganization, we eliminated our firm transportation costs in the second quarter of 2016, and we'll have much smaller firm transportation costs starting in December of 19. We can talk more about that if you have questions. And we sell our natural gas at the tailgate of the processing plants in Opal, Wyoming. There's excess pipeline capacity, easily 2 to 3 BCF a day. So we achieve high realizations, normally 90 to 93% of NYMEX in terms of the ability to sell our gas. And we don't need firm transportation to sell our gas west. If you look at the components of our cost structure, you see the fourth one in line there, production taxes, which is a pretty big area of color. That's we pay 12% of our revenue stream of our commodity prices to the state of Wyoming in production taxes. So that's the only category of cash operating expenses we like to see increase, because if natural gas prices are increasing, we're getting 88% of that. But you can see how we've been plus or minus a dollar per MCFE for over a year. Let's dig down a little deeper in terms of our cash costs. This is a, again, cash operating cost comparison with primarily natural gas companies, because obviously if we compared our cash operating costs to oil producing companies, we'd be way low. But this shows that on balance, we are on the far left side of cash operating costs with all our gas producing peer group for three quarters here. And we're, again, at plus or minus a dollar at MCFE, and you see the folks on the far right-hand side who are $1.50 or $1.70 per MCFE, much higher cash costs. If you look a little closer at that, in the bottom part of the slide, we've got lease operating expenses and total G&A, cash G&A, and you see that we're able to achieve that low overall cash costs even though our lease operating expenses aren't on the lowest end, because we have thousands of long life, lower daily volume wells that just cost more to take care of than if you have only hundreds of higher volume wells earlier in their productive life. So our lease operating expenses are towards the right-hand side of the scale, the higher cost. Of course, that includes our production taxes too. I mean, it does. That's just lease operating expenses, excuse me. So we're at 30 cents or thereabouts. But then you look at our G&A costs, cash G&A, and we're way low on the left side. And those folks that have low LOE costs, amazingly, on the left side, have very high cash G&A costs. Don't understand that. But our cash G&A costs are 3-4 cents an M, whereas the high-cost folks are 40 cents. So on balance, even with the higher operating costs due to our thousands of lower volume wells, we have low-cost overall cash costs. We've been able to decrease our drilling completion costs over time. It's not linked to the commodity, because we've been able to do it in times when commodity prices have gone up. And so this metric here is to show our ability to lower our drilling completion costs in contrast to where oil prices are. To drill a typical Pinedale vertical directional well in 2006, cost $7 million a well. We were down to $2.6 million in 2016, quite a bit of progress there over time. And if we look at the well cost reduction over four time frames here, the first 2006, 2008, and compare that to what was going on with oil prices, you see that our well cost declined over 20%, while oil prices went up over 50%. So the message here is that we've been able to achieve productivity-based improvement in well costs, not beating on the service companies. Same thing in 2009, 2011, well costs down just a tad, 4%, but oil prices up. 2012 to 14, well costs down 19%, well prices flat. And then more recent time period when we have had lower oil prices and we were able to achieve lower well costs with that. Basis differential, important item if you're a domestic natural gas producer. Most of the growth, I think all of you are aware of, in natural gas supply in the lower 48 since 2012 has occurred in Appalachia. No of the other supply basins have had any growth. And as a result of that, they've suffered some diminution of value. That's where we were back in the early 2000s, where we didn't have enough pipeline capacity out of the Rockies. We were selling our gas for 60 to 65% of Henry Hub. But you look on this slide, and you can see for the last 7 years, 2010 through 16, that we've been able to achieve price realizations equal to or in excess of 90% of NYMEX on an average annual basis. And the first quarter of 2017 was 95%. And we contrast what we're able to achieve with Rockies gas to Appalachia. We have Appalachian production, so we track that. But you see we're well above where they are in terms of realizations, which should mean that, and combine that with our very low cash operating costs, and we have very attractive returns. Another slide on the pipeline transportation infrastructure. You can see that there's all the pipes coming out of Opal. The total is 6.5 Bs a day of takeaway capacity. There is capacity in most all of those pipes any day, and we're able to take advantage of that and not need firm transportation to get our gas to market. 98% of our gas goes to California. And there has been no growth in the Western Basin gas supplies in many years, so we're not suffering growing production. Let's talk a minute about what our margins are, what a recycle ratio would be. Look at our realizations as compared to our cost. The left-hand side of the slide shows the realizations. We just walk you through. This was done back in April, late April, when we were raising our debt for emergence, or slightly after that. NYMEX Henry Hub strip price at the time was $3.36 in MMBTU. We take the normal basis differential, so we subtract 34 cents from that. We have no firm transportation charges. Our gas is richer than it's about 1,060 as opposed to 1,000. BT is for MCF, so we've got a BTU uplift of 17 cents. So our pre-hedge realized price is $3.19. Percentage of NYMEX Henry Hub is 94.9, call it 95%. And then we're going to roll in some of the condensate crude oil we have to get a combined corporate realization at the bottom. You see the same math for our oil. You see the percentage gas, 94% oil, 6% in our mix. And so our weighted average gas equivalent price is $3.48, which for this time period is 103.5% of NYMEX. We look at our cost structure, our lease operating expense, 33 cents. Operating lease on water and condensate gathering system, 7 cents, production tax, 35, gathering fees, 30, transportation, 0, cash, G&A, 3 cents. Our total EBITDA cash cost here, we're excluding interest, is $1.08. So we look at that, we subtract the $1.08 from the $3.48, and we get an EBITDA margin of $2.40. Then we contrast that with our 2016 F&D cost of 98 cents, and you have a recycle ratio at 2.4 times, which is pretty strong. Let's see how that compares to our brethren. This is someone else's work that we just put on the slide, another firm, but you can see that our recycle ratio is very competitive with our upstream industry, whether your production is gas or oil. We're not at the far right, but we're about two-thirds to 75% of the way to the right, meaning that, again, with our low-cost structure and relatively high realizations, we have very high margins and have the ability to take our cash and reinvest it at favorable returns. It's another slide provided by a third party, which is very difficult to read, but it's their slide. The simple message here is RS Energy is estimating Ultra's 2016 break even was $2.23 per MCF. We rank second best in the study with a lower break even than all Marcellus producers except Cabot. So we can easily compete with the Marcellus. Costs, definitely. We're right there with them. Margins above them. We have an inventory of over 7,000 wells to drill. Almost 5,000 of those are in Wyoming and Pinedale, the primary asset. We're going to focus on well economics in Pinedale because that's where we're spending our capital these days. And a typical 4 BCFE well in Pinedale, which is the average of what we drilled 15, 16, and so far in 17, at a $3 gas price and $2.8 million well cost, so 35% IRR. And we just show you what returns would be with slightly smaller wells. So even a 3B well is a 19% IRR. Resource potential, again, it's Wyoming oriented. I'm just going to talk numbers on the far right-hand side of the slide. Because of the situation we were in at December 2016, we did not provide a traditional SEC proved reserve report because we couldn't book PUDs, not knowing what was going to happen. So we did an adjusted total reserve calculation here subsequently. So adjusted PDP reserves for year-end 2016 were 2.5 Ts, adjusted proof a little less than 6 Ts, 5.8 Ts, and a 3P number of almost 16 Ts. You see the PV-10 numbers, and I just want to jump back to Pinedale because that's really where the value is for the company today, where we have adjusted 3P of 13 Ts. Quick asset overview, starting with Pinedale. First quarter production, almost 660 million a day, 95% of the company's reserves, 4,900 remaining locations. We haven't talked about horizontal opportunities. If you have a one-on-one with us, we'll talk about that. These are all vertical wells. 2,600 well bores already in the field, well understood. Only less than 40% of the field is developed. That's amazing. We've been drilling wells since 97. I've been there since 99. I'm much older than I look. These are vertical wells. It is sand. It's not shale. We drill the wells directional from pads, and there's about a 13,500 vertical depth, and we frack 16 to 18 stages per well. 5,000 feet of gross interval, probably 1,000 feet of net pay. Relatively small acreage, 69,000 net acres. 100% HBP, and we operate 90% of it. Then the resource is reasonably well defined. More data on it, a large continuous field, proven reservoirs in Lanza Mesa Verde, the continuous nature of the field and our large operating position allows significant savings in terms of development, pad development drilling. We drill, complete, and produce all on the same pad simultaneously. A strong PDP base of development and production. We spent most of 2016 with two operated rigs while we were in our restructuring mode. We added a third and fourth rig in late in the fourth quarter. We are up to seven operated rigs in the field right now, with eighth one showing up end of July, early August. We have plans to grow production fourth quarter 17 versus fourth quarter of 16 by 20-25%. Similarly, we have plans to grow 2018 production over 17 by 20-25%, all while spending within cash flow. Well, economics, reserve size. Again, the wells we're drilling last few years are north of 4Bs, but we want to show you a complete downside estimate of what our returns would be with smaller wells over time. And we'll just pick on the 3.5B well at a $2.8 million well cost, and this all assumes $3 gas prices. We have 26% IRR, and you can see what the other numbers are on the table on the right. And to the extent you believe the gas prices will exceed $3 in your lifetime, then you can look at the $3.50 and $4 price cases and see where our returns are. A $3.50 gas price in a 4B well is almost a 50% IRR. The 3.5B well is about 37% IRR. But you get a full spectrum there. Our field is de-risked and delineated. You see the part of the slide on the left, if you can see it, shows all the producing wells in the field. We operate most of the field. QEP operates a bit in the north, and we have a 25% working interest in all their wells. On the right-hand side, you see the acreage delineation, meaning how the acreage is spaced for drilling. The blue color indicates that we have it approved for 5-acre drilling, increased density drilling to recover the resource, and that's all approved by all the regulatory bodies. And QEP has drilled most of their acreage out on 5s. We have drilled most of ours, not even on 10s yet. And Jonah Field to the south, where it says Stud Horse Butte on the slide, has been drilled largely on 5s. It's tight gas. It's not shale. You know, we can run logs. We can find sand. It's ratty sand. You still have to frack the zones in order to have economic completions. The middle part of the slide shows you the upper and middle lands and lower lands of Mesa Verde in yellow, which is the primary producing horizon, although we are having some success of taking some wells deeper into the Erickson and Rock Springs. The upper lands we encounter at about 7,800 feet. That's when you hit overpressure. We drill through that all the way down to about 14,000 feet. And then we log the wells, look for the pay sections, and have 16 to 18 different frack stages. The frack stage is about $70,000 a stage. Here's our geology. This is a cross-section from the north end of the field to south end of the field. And you can see similarity in terms of the log distribution here of pay sands across there. These are all small lenticular sands. They're not necessarily connected to each other. They're discrete, so it's like a bowl of potato chips, and you're trying to drill down through the bowl of potato chips and contact as many as you can. And because they're not connected to each other by and large, that allows or it requires the need for increased density drilling, you know, 5-acre spacing drilling in order to recover most of the gas. We have a tremendous resource in terms of gas in place here. We probably have 600 Bs per square mile of gas in place. Per section for gas in place compared to other shaley gas reservoirs that have about 150 Bs per section. This is our normalized type curve. This is a 4 BCFE type curve with IPs at 6 million a day, more or less. We've got 2,800 wells that look like just like this with very little variations based on actual well size. So lots of history. This is not anything that's new or uncertain, and we have a third-party reservoir engineering firm, Netherland Sewell, that does our reserves every year. Our small oil field in Uinta, 8,000 net acres, 137 producing wells, 2,800 barrels a day of production, all operated, you know, 6,500 to 7,500 depth. Vertical wells, we have 228 20-acre locations yet to drill. After that, we may be drilling 10-acre wells and a water flood. We actually have 2 pilot water floods in service now to see if we can just skip drilling a 10-acre wells as Newfield did nearby in a much larger field they have of a similar quality and similar reservoirs and see if we can skip that to create more value. We've got 200 wells to drill as we go forward in time. Here's the economics. A 150,000 barrel well at $1.7 million at a $50 realized price. Our differentials are $3 or $4 off of NYMEX right now, so we're not in a $50 realized price. But at $50 realized price, we get about 33% return on a $1.7 million well cost. So we currently have no drilling going on here, and we don't plan to drill anything here until we get to the $50 realized price. Marcellus, we had a reasonably sized Marcellus positions back in 2008, 2009, 2010. We had partially operated, partially non-operated. Our biggest non-operated piece got acquired. Our operator got acquired by Shell. That gentleman now owns the Buffalo Bills and a hockey team up there. He's doing really well. We didn't do so well when Shell took over. Our costs went through the roof, and we tried to decrease our activity level there. Long story short, the only thing we have there now, because in 2014 when we purchased Shell's interest in Pinedale, as part of that we traded some of our Marcellus acreage for part of Pinedale and gave them cash. So the remaining Marcellus position we have is that which was operated by Anadarko. They recently sold out of Appalachia Marcellus, but they didn't and we didn't have spent any money in capital there since mid-2012. So we're just producing PDPs. We have a reasonable net acreage position, 72,000 net acres. We own 50% working interest there. We own a gathering system for both water and gas that we and Anadarko built. Alta Resources bought Anadarko's. That's all HBP. If you draw sticks on a map, it's almost 2,000 gross locations. It's not top tier Marcellus, but it's close. But we need a $3 realized gas price to make it work with our overall economics. So right now we're just sitting on it, and I think this says more of the same. And as to 2017 guidance, I think we've talked about $500 million of drilling completion capital budget. Overall capital budget would be above that because of some other issues, capitalized G&A and some facility costs. We're targeting production of 290-300 Bs, which is just modest growth from 2016. We're trying to spin our business back up. Our story is really a 2018 story with a significant growth in production of 20-25%. We're talking about, you see our realizations, we've already spoken about that. We've talked about our cost structure. And we're looking at EBITDA of $650, $700 million. And if we achieve our production targets for 2018 and we have a plus or minus $3 natural gas strip, then we should have EBITDA over $800 million in 2018. So we should go from $400 million EBITDA in 16 to $600 and some odd million in 17 to $800 million in 18. We do have a fair amount of gas hedged for 2017. I'm sad to say we are in the money. It wasn't a goal. We'd like to have check gas prices go up, but at an average MCFE price of $3.34 an M. Summary, a Western Basin-focused natural gas company recently got its feet back from underneath it. High margins, low costs, tens of years of inventory, repeatable, predictable development, no pipeline issues, no pipeline transportation issues, and a good-looking balance sheet and forecast of growing cash flow. And that's it. Thank you.
Any questions from the audience? I'll start with one. Can you just walk us through what the balance sheet looks like today?
We have $2 billion of debt. What else would you like to know? That's what I'm happy with. We only have $2 billion of debt.
Yep, okay. You mentioned horizontal potential at Pinedale. What zone looks interesting to you, and any plans to test that this year or next?
The development of the horizontal opportunity in the Lance and Mesa Verde sections of both Pinedale and Jonah, which should probably be renamed. They're all the same same field. The need to try drilling horizontal wells is really one based on a lack of development upside. So we've been slow to the game there. Mm-hmm. There are other players that have drilled I can think there's four other horizontal wells that were drilled down, they say Jonah Field, but they're probably more correctly, you should say South Pinedale Field, where they were drilled. Two of them look like they're very successful. One was drilled off structure. We don't even want to talk about that. And the third one is marginal at this point in time. We're uncertain. But they were really drilled because of lack of vertical development locations. So they had to test it for some upside. We're enthusiastic about what that means for us. For us, given that we've got the almost 5,000 locations just to drill with pretty strong economics, it's about resource expansion. We have areas off the structure of the anticline, east and west, where you don't have all the shallow Lance reservoir. You do have the deeper Lance and the Mesa Verde, where it makes more sense to develop that in a horizontal application. We are aggressively looking at that. But for us, it has to compete with the existing inventory. Whereas with those who have drilled there so far with some success, they just don't have much inventory. So we're on to it. You'll see us talking about and drilling some horizontal wells, but it's not we're not going to be as aggressive as others may be in exploiting that.
I know you guys do have a very significant resource potential, but one of your peers is marketing their Pinedale interests. I mean, any interest, or what's your appetite for A&D to kind of consolidate the field?
Well, we have an appetite for some being consolidator in the area. The QEP interest that's being marketed now didn't come out at a good time for us, having just emerged. We are very sensitive to our debt level. We do own 25% interest in most of their wells. We know their cost structure. We know the reserves. We probably know it too well. They have some unique midstream contracts that are different than ours. It's not limited upside in terms of development location. I think we've said, for several quarters that we don't think they have more than 225 development locations. I think that's a number that they've said themselves in transcripts of conference calls that they have limited upside. So it's largely PDP purchase. They don't have the 5,000 locations. They don't have our margins. If you look at their cost structure, they don't have our margins. We wish them well. I don't think we're going to be the buyer, if that's what you're asking.
Gotcha. Could you give us kind of your outlook for long-term basis in the Rockies? There's obviously been a lot of private equity deals in the Rockies. I mean, do you see any risk to that basis widening longer term?
You can't deny there's a risk it'll widen. I think if you look at the changeover of Western Basin gas assets that have occurred over the last handful of years, most of the buyers are private equity-backed firms that aren't necessarily in it for the growth. This isn't where you're buying raw acreage and trying to have substantial growth so you can flip it. This is where these folks are coming in with a longer-term view of owning the asset, probably creating a dividend stream to pay themselves back, pay back debt, pay them a dividend stream, and then they'll decide what they do at 8 to 10 years from now. We haven't seen any growth in Western Basin gas at all since 2012. And with the advent of the private equity folks buying the Piance assets and some other assets, that continues. They're not growing. I think that's a plus for us in terms if we can have a little growth that we should be able to maintain reasonable basis. The Permian issue, people have brought that up to us recently. Growth in gas there and the blowout there, won't that affect us? We can't say it won't affect us, but all the pipes out of Permian going west are full. So there's no more Permian gas that can flow west, and all the new pipeline projects they're talking about for natural gas, the Permian, are flowing back to the Gulf Coast or back to Mexico. They're not talking about any additional expansions to flow west. So again, I think we're protected there.
Anything from the audience? All right. Oh, we got one right there.
Can I talk about the transportation costs? Where we used to have REX firm transportation costs of over $80 million a year, and now we don't? Is that what you want me to talk about? I'm sorry? Well, I would like to tell you that because we went through in-court restructuring, we were able to haircut everybody and just walk away from them and pay them cents on the dollar. That's not the case because we were, I think, the only solvent in-court restructured company in 40, 50 years. So we didn't have that advantage. We had to go pay everyone's claims 100% or negotiate something with them. In the case of REX, we were able to negotiate something where we pay them. They filed the claims, it's all a record of about $300 million, and we reached a settlement with them where we will pay them some money, not near half of less than half of the $300 million or half of $300 million, lump sum. And then we signed up for a new transportation firm transportation contract that doesn't effectively start till 2020 for 7 years at one-third of the old rates we had. So we're able to push it in the future, much lower cost, pay them not their full claim, but give them a future transportation contract that they can put value on and helps them with their overall business, and do it in a way that we have optionality over the base. If gas prices are $5 in 2020 and we want to move gas to the Midwest because production elsewhere has fallen, I don't know what the scenario would be because we haven't moved gas to the Midwest in a long time, but it gives us optionality to do that. But as a way of settling it, for example, that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.